I'm here with John Quetter, Director of R&D for North America for Technetics, and we're having a conversation about additive manufacturing and sealing. Good afternoon, John. You and I have been talking offline a little bit about additive manufacturing, and one of the reasons why that came up was because met with several customers, particularly in new space, who have a need to iterate quickly and iterate often in relation to our metal seals, and they are perplexed and sometimes challenged by our long lead times and just the way we have to do business in order to get them custom what are effectively custom seals for their application. And so they frequently ask me about additive manufacturing. Many of them are using additive manufacturing, and so I know you've been busy in that regard in relation to what we do at Technetics. And so just wanted to kind of get a download from you and share that publicly with folks as to I guess first of all, just what is Technetics doing in relation to additive manufacturing, particularly around metal sealing?
Yeah, so additive's kind of been a tool to be used in a lot of the different environments and markets that we play in. But a few years ago, Technetics invested in a few desktop machines that they're more for hobbyists at this point in time, but they've given us a bit of insight into the science and the really the language around additive manufacturing. You know, you got to speak a certain way and talk about certain things like striations and layer lines and everything else. But I think it's done two things for us. The education is obvious. The idea of being able to get on these things and mess around and learn something even when it fails is kind of huge, especially when it was an up and coming technology where not a lot of people were really investing a whole lot of time and effort into it. Now that it's reached a bit of an increase in the amount of, you know, materials and printers and methods and everything out there that are available, I think it's given us a little bit more strategic insight into where some of the other vendors and, you know, suppliers of things are moving and how that can really affect our products, specifically in seals. It's always been kind of a difficult ask. Number one, because printing metal was not on the topic of additive manufacturing in the very beginning. It was using a little bit more of the polymeric and plastic type materials because they were easy to work with. Now that there's more of fusion methods and powder binding type stuff to where you can use metallics, it's gotten a little bit more topical for our business, albeit not exactly where we need it to be because of the tolerances and things that we keep on our products, but it's starting to move a lot faster in the right direction for us to be able to use it on a final product. We've done a fair amount of prototyping and you know, work fixturing type stuff for manufacturing, trying to get stuff out on production floor real quickly that helps us in the process, but hasn't really produced an exact final part off the build platform yet. What we've done is all the periphery stuff. You know, those work fixturing and holdings that I mentioned. And then we've also reached out to some partners and stuff to actually test drive some of the powder metallurgy additive manufacturing methods to see what a final near net metal seal would look like. And I mean, I'm not to sugarcoat it or anything, but it hasn't been a great success. I mean, there's a whole lot of improvements that need to be made to really make that a viable option.
So maybe could you talk a little bit about the pros and cons? You know, I obviously highlighted one that's more commercial in nature, but technically, what do you see as being negative in relation to where we are at today, and then what do you see as being potentially positive opportunities related to additive manufacturing for metal seals?
Well, I think I alluded to one of the big ones that we found so far is the idea of the accuracy and repeatability of whatever the system or the process is. Some of the test cases that we've used on seals are, somewhere in the neighborhood of a 4-inch diameter metal seal. And when we put it into a compressive environment to where we would use it in an actual piece of hardware, you see these things failing along the layer lines of the material. So if you think about the way that additive works, it builds up layer by layer. Every place that there's another layer of material laid on another one, you can think of that as a welded joint, and then it becomes a fracture point for the ways that we use our seals. We entice plastic deformation in the material, and that's what largely creates the leak tight seals that we depend on when we're designing new metal seals. The other really big factor into providing a consistent part is the base material itself. And there aren't really good controls out there in the market yet for standardized product. So if you bought 718 alloy from vendor A in powder form to put into your 3D printer and start making a product, that may be completely different than vendor B, not only in composition, but also in size, texture, the way and the method that they make it, all that kind of stuff is uncontrolled right now. So you have to kind of make your best guess as to what's going to be the most viable starting point and then move on from there. And if there's a drastic change or something down the line in the stream of the process, that could invariably affect the overall final product. Other considerations that we've had over the course of time when we talk to some of our customers about this stuff is just the flight time that some of this stuff has. And I don't mean that from a strictly aerospace mentality. I just mean use in a system. You have to have some sort of backing on some of this stuff to get good buy-in. And, just saying a simulation is going to run it is not good enough in some of this. So characterization is necessary. And, then you get back into your quality questions is how do I rely on the fact that this part that I make today is going to be the same tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And, your quality system has to be really, really robust to be able to handle that. From a positivity standpoint, I think that all the good things that you talk about when it comes to additive is not really dependent upon the product that you're talking about. It's just across the board. I mean, your envelope to be able to design things is astronomically larger because you don't have sight lines and fear of tool paths and things that get in the way with traditional manufacturing. You kind of build the opposite direction with additive. You start from zero and start putting material on material instead of taking it away. And I think that lends itself to the creativity of the traditional design engineer, because what used to not be available to them could potentially be a problem solver, where before a machinist would look at a print or a model and say, how the heck am I supposed to make that? I mean, now you have your only limits and bounds are based off of the strength of the material and the volume of the build platform that you have to work with.
So for somebody or brothers and sisters who are maybe in R&D or, focused on testing or maybe even in research, who might be willing to iterate with us and, don't have any risk associated with iterating and maybe even a potentially lower level of performance. Do you have any, can you qualify what kind of performance or leak rates somebody who is considering a printed metal seal might get?
I think you would see in in the order of magnitude of somewhere between a 10 to the minus 2 to 10 to the minus 4, depending on how you would design the actual seal itself and what kind of materials you use. I wholeheartedly believe that the process and the procedures and the materials and everything involved in the process are getting better and better every day. It's just a matter of getting to the point where the small single digit thousands or half a thousands worth of tolerance bounds and overall strength of the material and everything getting as close to 100% as possible are really what we rely on to design our seals. So you may machine the same seal in an environment or form an E-ring or a C-ring or something and get a overall decade or two decades better sealing performance than you would from an additive right now.
You just mentioned something that I was curious about is, do you see any limitations around the geometry of a particular seal? Meaning, you know, is it possible to print an E-ring at this point with, and if so, you know, those cross sections can get kind of complicated. So are there limitations there?
The limitations are really based on the materials. I mean, we've played around with some, we've tried some plastic E-rings to begin with just for giggles. Obviously they're not going to do a whole lot, but, the way that the powder metallurgy additive manufacturing works is the binding and the material itself acts as kind of like a support structure. So I think an additive E-ring might be possible with the right materials and the right end use capability out of it, but the struggle I have with thinking through it from a purely positive mentality is really just that fracture criticality, and the loss of the part along those layer lines is probably going to be, like I said, every single layer becomes a fracture point in the process. So you probably see a fair amount of cracking in an E-ring.
Do you think that's going to affect the compression forces required? And obviously metal seals have a challenge around spring back. So do you have any indication as to how this powdered material would work from, you know, and how it might relate to the data that we already have with traditional metal seals?
I think it would be rather similar to a casting in most instances. I think you could do some post-processing on it with some of the things that they add on to traditional additive manufacturing process steps, like a surface conditioning. If you had a real rough surface, maybe you would put it through an acid bath to knock down some of those high spots. You could also put it through a hot isostatic press process to where you basically heat up the material and pressurize the environment to close up as many voids in the material as possible. Because when you've got little tiny balls of material laying against one another and then laser curing on a sinter process, you're traditionally, one of your focuses has been trying to reduce the amount of voids, the empty space that ends up happening because material doesn't lay right or doesn't behave right dynamically. That hipping process actually helps with that. It also serves to strengthen the material to as close to rot as you would expect it to be. So after that, then you can traditionally heat treat and get the types of aging and structural expectations out of the materials as you would otherwise, maybe just not 100% of it. Maybe you're looking at somewhere in the 99% range or 98% range.
Do you think that there are objective advantages, you know, because it versus a polymer seal? Because I think the default is, if test folks that are running testing or prototyping, especially for in aerospace for ground related equipment, and they can't get a metal seal in time, they just kind of wing it with a polymer seal. So would there be an advantage to a 3D printed metal seal versus a polymer seal that might be the default at this stage?
Yeah, your obvious advantage is going to be thermal resistance. So if you're at that temperature where you're just forcing an elastomer in there for a short amount of time and watching it melt and degrade until you put in another one, you can probably rely on an additive seal to do something similar, just not have to be replaced as often. And if you're load characteristics and your modeling techniques and, you know, your design engineer that's putting it together has the control and the capability to, you know, fuss around with the material thicknesses down to places where you're not able to get off the shelf materials, then that becomes a really powerful opportunity for you, because number one, you don't have to wait for a mill, for instance, if you're making a C-ring and you need sheet material. You don't have to wait for a mill to show up with a train car full of material at the exact thickness that you wanted it to be able to form a metal seal. You could iterate 5, 6, 7, 8 times on a design to get the exact situation that you want for the exact application that you're trying to put it into before you even get some of the supply chain things out of the way in today's environment. I mean, trying to find titanium these days is like trying to find gold sometimes. And then the other thing you can do too is mess around with some of the coatings. I mean, the materials will still take a plating. They'll still take a PTFE like coating, things that we traditionally see on a metal seal to help the metal to metal contact when you put it into a groove or into a flange set. So that stuff doesn't change. I do think you open up you have to open up the sealing performance a little bit and the expectations, because you're no longer dealing with an exactly perfectly plane surface. I mean, unless you were to go and post-process by acid etch or polishing or something like that to get it to a surface where you were acceptably flat in that case.
So you mentioned, and you know, one of the things that we're obviously very sensitive to in metal sealing is just environmental concerns. So are there limits to the temperature and pressures that, you know, compared to what the data that we already have with traditional metal seals?
I think you'll see a bit of a reduction in the pressure resistance just because of the lack of information on the products. I mean, again, it goes back to characterization. So you would need to really understand how consistent you can get your parts off of whatever the process is that you were choosing to use for additive manufacturing. But temperature wise, the powder metallurgy materials, after they've been sintered, and even if you went through a HIP process, like I said, you can put them through a typical heat treat and still expect the material properties to behave somewhat similar to raw material or heat treated at that point. So I don't think the thermal degradation would be a factor. Say you use 718, it would still perform thermally as a normal 718 would.
So just kind of wrapping up here, I guess a few things that are kind of spinning around my head are we interested in potentially iterating with somebody if somebody kind of wants to walk down this road and path with us? And you know, could you summarize maybe what would be needed in order to start that process and what the timeline might look like? Obviously, that's a, you know, it sounds like there's some things that need to be worked out. So maybe the first pass might still be quite a lead time.
Yeah, we definitely need to work out some more capabilities personally as a business. We do have metallic additive manufacturing capabilities, but it's off of a spool. So fused deposition modeling. So we've got to get our hands around that first before we start really diving into more of the powder metallurgy internally. But there's partners and things that we have that can print in those methods for us. We would then be, I guess, developing our ability to talk to the printers and things like that. But we would also be using our design expertise to be able to print something in the first place. We would just be leveraging some outside resources to do the actual physical printing. I think that that lead time would become a little further down the line, months worth of trying to figure out what the right process is and what the right materials are that we're using. But then after the initial selection's complete, the iterative process goes a lot faster.
And would that apply to every single design, or do you think that the process would be similar across different diameters, different material compositions, different geometries? And that once we work that out with somebody, we could see a economy of scale.
Yeah, I think we would be in a better position once we distinctly found what we wanted to use. Your size and scale, ability to fit something in as a metallic seal is going to be dependent upon the volume of the machine itself. So, there's something quite a bit bigger than, 12, 15 inches, you might have to change processes. But if you bound yourself to a certain seal diameter and make that your maximum for the time being, then, you fit in there, and the machine itself doesn't really mind what material you're using over another. You just change the powder.
So it sounds like we're still a little bit of a ways off to moving to a license model in our business. We're going to be making seals for the foreseeable future then.
That's the hope anyway. I mean, even if we were to partner with someone to try and make some of their own decisions, I would expect us to still be in the background helping make good decisions, in some sci-fi like future where everybody has an additive machine at their desk and can make whatever they want. I think the overchecks are still necessary, and the expertise that we hold as a business from metallic sealing is a big part of making the right decisions in the first place.
All right. Well, thank you for chatting with me here for a few minutes. Do you have anything that you want to say before we close?
No. I think this was good. If anybody does want to goof around with some 3D metallic printed parts, then it doesn't even have to be a metal seal per se. But we are looking into more ways and quicker manufacturing methods like this to be able to leverage, like you put it, economies of scale and some of the alternative design methods than just relying on traditional manufacturing.
All right. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, man.